What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. Guys, I hope you had a great weekend. I know that I did. It's school season out here in Oregon. We have never gone back to school this early, but I got my little guy with me today before he goes tomorrow. And coming up on today's show, I'm going to discuss his favorite fighter, which happens right now to be Alex Pereira, who, by the way, claims Uncle Liev doesn't want to fight him. In fact, this might be the truth, but it also might be a troll job. We're going to get into that. Plus, I'm going to give you my thoughts on Jiří Prochazka, who's teasing a move to 185 pounds. But I think he needs to hire Uncle Chael to be his PR guy because he's blown his first spot. I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. I'm going to tell you what he did wrong. I'm even going to tell you what all went down over the weekend in Las Vegas. Rahalo made a bonehead call out again. His call out of Drinkus du Plessis was a bonehead move, and that is according to Alexander. Now, Alexander that wrote this, I appreciated his opinion, but I wish he would have furthered that, because there is a test if your call out works. And there's an actual test. There is a science behind it. It's not an opinion. An opinion would be, did you like it? But that's not what we're discussing, whether you liked it. It was a bonehead move, which means did it work? And the test, simply, step number one is you get a response, right? Stay here. Let me get you from A to Z, and maybe another time we'll connect the dots. Step one is that you get a response. That would be A. And then Z is you get the fight. So if you didn't get a response, no, it did not work. We can't get to letter B, right? We can't get to the second. We have to start with that. If you didn't get the fight, or rather, if you did, then everything was great. There's no discussion here. But what are some of the in-betweens? What are some of the letters between A to Z? Well, it being talked about, of course. Right? You're not going to get from a guy responding to a bout agreement without it being talked about. And here we are. Alexander wrote a piece. And I want to know why he called it a bonehead move. Brahalo is not going to get that fight. But what that really means, right? It's the same as when a parent tells his kid no. No doesn't mean no. It means not right now. And you got to understand that concept. Like, I firmly believe in calling somebody that you can get. I firmly believe in that. But if I was to expand upon that, that's once you're a known commodity. Right? This was the B-side of a main event on free TV against a 40-year-old. I mean, like, there was a lot of moving parts here. I want to be very respectful of Brahalo. I truly do. I'm not looking to be my usual jerk of a self. Not in the least. In fact, I'm defending him. But I will also admit for you, I don't know if Brahalo is his first name, his last name, the city that he's from, a nickname. I don't know. So he plays by different rules, right? If he wants to call out Drinkus du Plessis and get Alexander to write a piece on it, get old Chael to speak about it, I heard Daniel Cormier early today talking on it. Daniel also didn't love the call out because he can't get with Drinkus. But what you may not understand, you got to start somewhere. Nobody gets a title fight that they don't call for. So now the question is, well, when do I call for it? Is it only a brilliant move as opposed to a bonehead move if I get it next? Why do I have to get it next? Here's one of the pieces of this, okay? It's very important that you call somebody out. I agree. It is a massive miss when you don't. It is also a massive miss when you are indecisive. Like, if you come in and you throw a few names out, you've now achieved nothing. Believe me, understand these things very well, but I will share with you, there's another reason you got to call somebody out. And that reason is if you don't, when you're a main event guy, you just beat number five, you might flop and become number five. That would seem a little bit zealous to me, but 1 week ago they did it with Dan Hooker. They took him from 12 to 5 just because he beat five. That is not the way it is supposed to work, but I'm sharing with you, if it works this week the way that it did last week, he will now be number five. Not to mention, he was in a main event. Nothing in this business matters more than your card placement. Nothing. Your ranking isn't remotely close to as important as your card placement. Where do you go when you're a main event, right? You understand the word promotion, right? That's not just a word we throw out. It actually means something. It means to go forward. It means more. It means you're for it. Pro. You understand linguistics? I'm not trying to be a dick, but do you understand that? So once you win in a main event, you don't go down, just by definition. You're not a main event winner, and in your next fight, you're not a main event. So the biggest problem that Brahalo could run into is that someone else call him out. That's the other thing that you're trying to avoid. He's trying to call somebody, and in Alexander's mind over at, I think this is mania.com, he believes he called for Rodriguez, which he is not yet ready for, and therefore it is a bonehead move. And I got to remind you, he's got to go that away. And he just took out number 5. That means he's got 4 options, none of which are better than the other one. Chimaev and Whitaker, who are already tied up and busy, Izzy, who could be doing anything, including never fighting again, and then you've got Sean Strickland and Rodriguez. Like, there's just not a lot of options. And it's not a situation of don't call for anybody. That would be the biggest miss. So when you call for a guy that you're not going to get, which, by the way, doesn't mean you're not going to get, it just means not now. One of the reasons you've got to do it, and he's got to be a guy going that way. If you don't, and you come to number 5, and all those names I just told you are busy, and all of a sudden you get a guy like Bo Nickel that comes and calls you out, that's what you don't want. You do not want a hammer in the... You do not want Brendan Allen's dance card to be empty. And all of a sudden, he's coming for you. That's why you got to call someone out. That's why you always got to talk and move in that direction. If a guy was ever to call somebody out lower than him, he would get the fight instantly. But he would also be teased. Which is wrong. You should always want the most money against the easiest opponent. Or you fight the champion. There is no in-between. So Kyle, who didn't know what to do with Brocaio, Brahalio, he didn't know what to do in that moment. He hadn't been in that moment. He hadn't closed out a show before. He hadn't beat a number 5 guy. He hadn't knocked somebody down. He hadn't gone 25 minutes. He wasn't the last word before they fade to black and roll the credits. He didn't know what to do. So in that moment, he, as opposed to calling out nobody, did go in the right direction, which was forward. But there's also the one of going in the other direction and calling out a guy underneath you, if you believe in the rankings. If you believe the rankings are right, you're going to be number 5. Of course you'd want to fight number 8. Of course you'd want to fight number 11. But guys' minds don't work that way. And I would just be curious, okay, I've laid out my case for why it was a good idea that Brahalo did this. Alexander called it a bonehead move. I would like to hear what his case for that statement. Prohaska dipped his toe in the waters of going down to 185 pounds, even made a brief comment about Du Plessis. Said he wouldn't stay there. Said he'd pop down, fight for the championship, go back up. And I love the idea. I don't know what is going on with Yuri fully, but there appears that 185 pounds, I mean, listen, changing weight classes is the single best way to get a fresh coat of paint in this sport. The sport's very different. It's all collective. I mean, nobody else has to do this. Basketball, football, baseball. I came from wrestling. It didn't matter if I was a freshman in high school switching to a sophomore, if I was a freshman in college switching to sophomore, junior, senior. It didn't matter. Every time there was a new season, I'm undefeated. I would be introduced as such. Get 3 wins, 3-0 on the season. Undefeated, whatever it was, but you get to restart that clock. In MMA, it's not that way. Those losses will follow you. And switching weights is a very effective way. It is how you become undefeated. It's the only way to become an undefeated middleweight, just for example. I like the idea. Yuri is not without a home at 205 pounds. There is a fan base that is coming on board. The samurai gimmick and that angle is working. He is a phenomenal athlete, and he's wildly tough. I mean, a really true competitor. But like we've seen with so many others, if you've had a chance and you had it twice, you're not going to get it a third time. Broad stroke. But do you think that Pierre is going to get beat? I mean, a great way to succeed at anything, guys, is to just outlast the guy standing next to you. One of the great ways to make it, particularly in sport, is to find a way to hang in there a little longer, one more season, one more quad, one more tournament, one more Olympic cycle, whatever it is, and just let the other guys stop. But it's not much of a strategy. You'll find yourself in life, well, what do you want to do when you get out of college? Just for example, well, I hope, and whatever comes after that, you got to stop a guy. Hope's a wonderful thing. Hope will get you up in the morning, but hope is not a strategy. So I like the idea of Prohaska looking at something. I can't tell you that he doesn't draw. I just can't. I know he didn't used to draw, but I can't tell you that's the case now. I do have to look at December, two Decembers ago, when he was out for 7 days and they took a belt off him for what was said to be the worst injury ever seen. And 1 month later, according to his own Instagram, he was back in the gym and training. A belt was taken from him that he never lost. It was taken from him after 7 days. In 7 days, there's no such thing, guy. You could be shot in the leg. In 7 days, you still have nothing. You just have a rumor. You just have a guess. You just have a diagnosis. You just have an MRI. You just have an X-ray. You have nothing in 7 days. Everybody is giving a deep breath. They took the belt off of him. So this is how poorly he was resonating and drawing. This was simultaneous with the heavyweight champion at that point having sat 9.5 months and kept his belt. So I share that and I bring that to you because he also is a former champion. Regardless of the interest, he also is one half, oh, and by the way, the winning half of the greatest light heavyweight title fight in the sport's history. He also has been in meaningful bouts in the home of mixed martial arts, which is T-Mobile. He's been in meaningful bouts at the Mecca of Madison Square Garden. So, and the reason I go in all of those directions, I mean, listen, if your promoter doesn't have a plan for you, you've got to identify that now. I mean, you've got to be able to see that right now. And I don't know that that's the case with Yuri. I think they're just in a tough spot where he was given a chance. He was given another chance. You got the same guy at the helm. What is the path back? And so many guys face this, which I'm just adding a support. I like the idea of 185 pounds. The bad news, when I talk about he can't draw, when I talk about you're gonna pull a belt off a guy, I mean, the most reluctant rematch in company history was Yuri versus Glover. They did everything in the world they could do to not have to make that fight because neither guy knew how to do anything that resembled bringing attention to the fight. But you got to know this, right? You got to understand all the pieces of the story because there was really nothing I did not like of fascinating, of closing my eyes and just imagining Prohaska against Duplessis. I mean, Dricus and the word on him is that he does everything wrong and gets away with it. Well, if you do everything wrong, you get away with it. That just means you're an awkward fighter, and awkward can be a real advantage. But what's a little bit harder for you guys to see is the will of Dricus. It's how hard he is pressing. It's the way he responds after he takes a big shot. That instead of wilting or shake it off or get your legs back, get a little space, he will come forward and attack. And these are the same compliments that guys say about Prohaska. That his will in there to win. And now you're just talking about how well does a guy compete. And it's not about how good of a fighter is, how good of a boxer is, how good of a wrestler, how good of a competitor is he. And the guys that have competed against Prohaska come out. They go in the back. They tell, hey, this guy's got a very rare spirit. So conceptually, I'm really into it. I got to tell you, I am really into that idea. Not to mention, Du Plessis is in a very rare spot where one or two title defenses in, and he's going to be lapping a division. I mean, it was just the way that he got to the championship. He had already gone through the top guys. So now we're already looking to recycle. His next opponent is a rematch. The one after that, should Whitaker find a way, is going to be a rematch. I'm just sharing with you, like, it is such a great idea to have Prohaska come down. It is such a fast track to a championship opportunity. I'm reading this thing by Prohaska. Now, the whole time, right, the whole time, it's wishful thinking, because I know I'm dealing with a guy who can't manage an interview. And a guy will pay money. He'll pay 10% to have somebody show him a jab, show him a cross, show him a kick up the middle. He'll pay 10% to a manager to help him know what this paragraph and what this subsection means. But he would never even consider hiring somebody in what's called creative development. It would never even cross his mind to consult. 20% is going out the door, right? That's just an industry standard. Uncle Sugar comes in, takes their 48.3% right at the top mail, right? Like, you're used to giving money. It would never cross his mind to bring in somebody that's creative to help him in these moments. Because while I'm reading this, I'm thinking, wow, this is really great. Somebody got a hold of him. Somebody told him, right? I mean, this is how you start. This is how these things happen. You shake it. You shake it as an idea. You wait to see what comes back. And in the very next sentence, he says, and then I will go back up to 205 pounds. In the very next sentence. There's guys in this sport that aren't going to like how their next match goes. And those are the guys that have said, my next match will be my last match. You're not going to like where that goes. There's guys in this sport that don't like how their next match goes. There are guys that are going to fight out their contract and bet on themselves or renegotiate with the company. And you know it because they go and they do those things publicly. They're not going to like how the next one goes. They're not going to like the placement, the opportunity that they're given. And we have had the biggest names, not just a solid guy. We've had the biggest names want to come back for one more. World champions that never lost their belt. Box office smash hits that want to come back for one more, but they make the mistake of saying one more. They don't make the commitment. Two and three fights down. I guarantee you three fights. I'm going to win. I'm going to defend. I'm going to defend again. They don't make those. And there's no use for anybody that's looking to come in on one night. And there are so many guys within this sport that believe it's about medals. And it was in Little League. It was in the amateurs. It was when you were a kid, but this is a business, and business is not done, particularly in this organization, with checkers, which is one move at a time. We don't see a lot of guys change weights and have success if they don't burn their boats in the first place, which means relinquish one title and come in so that you have to win. It's one of these things. So I loved it. I loved everything about Prohaska coming down. I believe that would be the headline. I believe that would be the top story. It was a pretty boring news week. But he said within the same interview, and then I'll go back to 205. So there'll be no opportunity to come to 85. And once you say those words, you can't take it back. And if you try to take it back, you try to go, oh my God, Chael, you're so right, and I'll do it. Okay, but just so you understand, you're now going to come down into what's known as a contenders match. You're not coming down into a title fight, which you could have. It's now, we're not going to trust you to stick around because you've realized the mistake you made. We're going to get our money on the front ends, which means a number one contenders match. And it's just one of these spots that didn't have to happen. If you're doing an interview just to make sound or to be polite, maybe a guy calls and you feel pressured. Maybe it was a favor. I don't understand that. To get nothing, you can do nothing. If you don't have a story, if you don't have a direction that you're trying to go, don't do the interview. If you do an interview that's going to spark attention, it's going to invoke the current sitting reigning champion who, by the way, doesn't want to do rematches. He doesn't want to fight Sean Strickland. He does not want to fight Robert Whittaker. He's already fought them. Nobody wants to fight the same guys over and over. You would have offered new blood in a division. You would have stolen the headlines had you not said, and then I'm going to go back up to 205. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale. Like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Alex Pejera. See, this is beautiful, guys. This is beautiful right here. Alex Pejera is a lot of things, but I have not caught him being a troll. I've caught him trolling. Trolling and being a troll are very different things. And in the world of the internet, they're both things that require mastery. Which perhaps he has. And there was a point in time when I could tell you every piece of social media Alex had ever put out. They were so good and so captivating, I could remember all of them. I can tell you about the time he kicks a soccer ball, picks up a bow and shoots an arrow right through it. I can tell you about the time he's on what they call it, a hoverboard, and he's shadow boxing. Like, the guy is very interesting. He adopted some kind of a concrete statue. He and his wife, and they had this bit where they were together, and the wife was like proud, like this was their baby. And Pierre has the straight face, like he has absolutely no emotion. I fell for it. I didn't realize it was the concrete statue. He said that he made adoption. I actually responded to him on social media and said, hey man, that's really cool. You're a hero. You just changed a life that you didn't have to. I fell for it. I didn't even get what he was doing. Now he's working this word. He's coming out and saying Chomo, and he's even putting it on shirts. And I'm just sharing for you, like, that's trolling, but that's not a troll. He comes out today. He says that Uncle Lyatt turned his fight down. Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's the whole reason he's fighting Roundtree. He's going to fight Uncle Lyatt, the number one ranked guy, the guy he said he was going to fight, the guys that you guys said you wanted to see him fight, the only guy in the division that DraftKings, my partner, has as a favorite over him. He said he was going to fight him, but Uncle Lyatt wouldn't fight him. He turned it down. And that would change everything. I mean, any ideas about not being the right guy or going to Roundtree as a way of protecting Alex, or the UFC making this decision because it was better for their division as a, like, any of these, they're gone. They would blow up in your face. And Uncle Lyatt says that's not true. Now, of course it's not true. It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. Like, we don't need a discussion about this. Of course, Uncle Lyatt did not work his way up the card and go through all the stuff that he went through to try to become champion only to turn down his shot at the champion. Like, it's just insane. Not to mention, Rachik is as hard of a fight as you're going to come across. Period, in the end. Like, Pierre is no harder than Rachik. He might do certain things that are hard. He might punch you a little bit hard, but that is no harder of a night. I mean, and I'm being silly. We don't even go down that road. Absolutely, Ankalaev did not turn down Pierre. In any circumstance, short notice, long notice, this weight, that weight, these rules, that jurisdiction, there was no offer to Ankalaev opposite Pereira that was turned down. But Pereira says that there was. And he's never trolled before. That's where this is so interesting. See, it's not as simple as, wow, that was really great entertainment, Alex. Thank you for that. Thank you for giving us something, which is how I felt when he booted the soccer ball and then shot the damn thing with a bow and arrow. Like, I felt, hey, thank you. That was cool. Thank you. But this is a little bit different. It's not over quite at he turned it down. Now, see, if you're going to go down that road, I wish you'd go further. Further is that no matter what happens in Ankalaev's next fight, he will not get a title shot. I'm going to fight Roundtree and then I'm going to fight Lionheart. I'm going to fight Roundtree and then I'm going to fight... I'm going to save that. I'm going to save that for another time. I'll give you one clue, though. It's not Ankalaev. It's not Ankalaev because he turned it down. Listen, Tom Aspinall is doing this right now and we all understand it. Surreal gone in the absence of John and Stipe, and John and Stipe are absent. They've got a contract and they're removed from discussion. Tom Aspinall obviously draws into Surreal gone. Obviously. But Tom, before he had the belt, offered that to Surreal, even flew out to see him face to face, and Surreal didn't do it. So now that Tom's got the belt, Surreal's decided he's going to come back, and Tom's saying, no. I needed you. I came to you. I try to be partners with you, and we all get it. Tom should not give him that shot. Tom should be petty about this. Absolutely. But Curtis Blaydes was given an opportunity to fight for a championship, make no mistake, because of that pettiness. Like, I'm just sharing with you. If you, in Alex's shoes, were to come out and say, he was offered it, he didn't take it. I'm not going to offer it to him again. I'm not wasting any more time with him. The same as I moved on to Roundtree, I've even got my next opponent lined up. And I'll share that with you at another date. Could you imagine if you're in Ankalaev's spot? Could you imagine how insane you would be going, particularly if Pereira stood on this? Every interview he does, which is very few. Every word that he spoke, which is very few. Not to mention, they're all stoic. He's got the ultimate poker face. That's part of the character, is he doesn't smile. So now, on the rarity that he speaks and what he says is something about you that changes the trajectory of all of your dreams. Your current motivation to go in there and do well against Rachik is not driven by a personal beef with Rachik. It is driven by a personal goal to get through Rachik to get to the championship of which you're already denied. Could you imagine? I mean, could you imagine? and the reason this isn't over is Pride was able to keep lies. Pride was able to keep secrets and do fake fights because they didn't tell anybody more than the people that needed to know. There would be no reason for a trainer, a corner man of any kind, to know. There would be no reason for the opponent who's going to win to know. The only guy that needs to know is the guy that's going to fall down and to be told what round to do it in. And that's the only person that they would tell. Which is why the celebration by the winner looked so authentic. It was. And it's why the post-fight interviews by the winner that looked so authentic, they were. Like, you didn't have to worry about somebody coming in and decimating you after the fact because you're not equipped with great actors. They're not acting. They didn't know. And I'm just wondering that with Pereira. I'm purely wondering if somebody told him Ankalaev turned it down. And that could have been done for a number of reasons. What many of you don't know, because Pereira speaks so little, is Pereira demanded Ankalaev. Pereira agreed to Ankalaev. Pereira went public with Ankalaev. I'm just sharing that with you. When it came back and it wasn't Ankalaev, the number one guy that was upset about that was Pereira. That's the real story. Now, How do you get him to Roundtree? Well, you get him to Roundtree because you book Unkalaev 3 weeks before. Now he's not even an option. He's gone. He's not an option because not only is he gone and tied up with Rajic, he actually has already turned you down. So you, Alex, that wants to stand on principle and not fight anybody because you know Unkalaev's the right guy, are now comfortable signing a contract with Roundtree because you were told that Unkalaev turned it down with within your competitor code would allow you to go to somebody else. So I'm wondering, was he told that? That would be one reason to do it. And another, just simple misinterpretation, right? You got Russian to English to Portuguese, back to English, and then sent over to Portuguese. It's one of these things where there could just be a confusion. So I'm curious. I hope it was the first. I hope that Piera has become a troll. It would be amazing. Champions don't troll. They don't have to. The champion doesn't have to go get a fight. He doesn't have to pick a fight. He doesn't have to draw somebody out. His next fight will be a championship fight because he's bringing the belt. It'll be for all the money. You don't need to have the conversation. It will be a main event. You'll be on the poster and get to do the countdown shows and put up on a billboard. Everybody else who's trying to get there has to try to troll. So if we saw a champion who started to do that and embrace the entertainment side, I'm just sharing with you. I would personally love it. And I think we will have our answer. Is that the kind of champion that we have? We will have our answer if we could get to the bottom of, was this a troll or was Alex Pereira lied to? Free the Mac. Conor McGregor is being persecuted. You gotta free the Mac. We need public support. This isn't right. This is an injustice. Free the Mac. I love it. It's very catchy. It's very anti-Conor. And Conor has only ever fainted one thing. He had everything. He had every crazy idea. He had all them stupid cars he claimed were his, really were. Spending way too much on a watch. Like, all of this stuff was real. The only thing he claimed to have that he didn't was power. And it was one of the most important ingredients in the McGregor character. But I have enjoyed watching him reveal that he does not have power. I've enjoyed it. It hasn't weakened him. It has in some ways made him appear vulnerable, which there is nothing, at least in America. Like, I don't know where you are watching this. In America, there is nothing, not the millionaire, the billionaire, not the astronaut, not the teacher, the lawyer, the fireman, nothing is more powerful in this country than a victim. If you can become a victim, you can be elected to the highest offices. You will be raised up. You will be released from handcuffs. We will no longer ask you, as the gold standard of reality, what happened. We'll just ask you, how did it make you feel? So, I'm just sharing, I like Free the Mac. I like Conor posting on Instagram, okay? A beautiful, beautiful setting. He is in the back deck of a very large home with a view. And I should mention, it's a covered patio. Like, it's kind of hard to say you're on the back deck or that you're outside if you have a roof over you. Like that's almost the definition of are you homeless or not. Do you have a roof over you? So he's actually outdoor with a roof and a heavy bag and a special set of equipment. And he's alone. He's not in a stinky, dirty, filthy gym where these things take place. Dirty and grimy and all the things that you would think that you need and all the hardships and sacrifices. He's in none of those things. Yet, Free the Mac. See? He's being persecuted. There's an injustice. There's an injustice taking place. And he needs your help. That is what is so wonderful about this. That, as an artist, is what made this piece so creative. He's presenting to you as that I am going at this alone. There is no one else in this video. It's just me, but I need you. I'm a regular man, and I'm coming to other regular men. I need you. I need your help. As opposed to, I am on vacation in an exclusive area that nobody else could afford to come, which is why I have the solitude of being here by myself, right? Like, it was just great. The whole thing was great. Hashtag free the Mac. Now, I am not closing my ideas to the idea that McGregor will, in fact, be on the December card. So, that's still open. And I can tell you they would like him on the January card in California, but now we're arguing about a month, right? Like, it sounds like we're pretty close to coming together at this point. We want you one state over 1 month later. You would like to do it in this calendar year. Like, we're getting close. Not to mention no other main event has been announced. Not to mention no other main event has been speculated. And you will have a couple of breaths before you get there, but not many. Not many. By the time O'Malley and Merab hit the ring at the Sphere, you are far more likely than not to have an announcement for December's UFC. That will be the UFC's next time returning to that city. But it's a different market because it's a destination town as opposed to going to local. So some of these marketing rules don't have to apply. I would just bet for you that they will. So Conor does have a little bit of time. I think he's sincere. Now, when I watched him hit the heavy bag, I've got to tell you, he moves in a beautiful fashion. And that is not a word that I use very often. And it's not a word that anybody can use very often to describe somebody's fighting style. I mean, to say, describe something that is designed first and foremost for damage. It's very hard to call that beautiful. But his body athletically does move in a very unique manner. And when he slows things down, like there's some real things you can learn about the fundamentals, as unorthodox as Conor may be. Well, you may not be able to do it just like McGregor, but when he slows things down, he will set his body. And if you understand what you're looking, you'll see where he's loaded where all the power is. You know what the next shot is going to be because he will set the body. He will shift. He will rotate. He'll get everything lined up before he goes into his next attack. It's just a fun thing to watch. I enjoy watching Conor. And my body doesn't move like that. It's unique. I like when he works out of a southpaw. I noticed that he had an emphasis on elbows and the power he has from that as opposed to leg kicks. I don't know if there's a tie-in or if that was just the clip that I saw. But I've seen two or three other clips as well. And I haven't seen a huge emphasis on the leg kick, which I think we could all understand. But it is the biggest question of the fight. The question is not, can he beat Michael Chandler? What difference does it make? He didn't beat the last guy. What difference does it make? They're not even fighting a weight class. Look, the whole question on this fight is, can Conor, is he special enough? Is he driven and disciplined and hungry enough to return after such a catastrophic injury? That is the story of this fight. And it is a very big story. It is a very big deal. I got to tell you, I am rooting for him fully in that regard. I hope he gets to that ring very healthy. I hope that his life moves on. But that's a tough spot. That is the worst injury that I've ever seen. Now, it's not worse than Weidman's. It's not worse than Hill's. It's not worse than Anderson's. But it's equal. That's the worst injury I've ever seen. It happens that I've seen it four times. But it's the same injury. It's terrible. Conor couldn't go five rounds back when he could train all of the time. How are you possibly going to go five rounds? You have the most undisciplined guy in the sport taking on maybe the most disciplined guy in the sport. How could you possibly breathe for five rounds? How? Just logically speaking, you couldn't do it at 155 where it is much easier to do than at 170 for obvious reasons. And you could train whenever you wanted. It was a choice. Now it wasn't even a choice. It's not even a question. Could not train for a meaningful amount of time. I'm not putting Conor down in this spot. I'm saying this is what he's up against. And a lot of people aren't understanding that. We are so quick to treat Conor as though he's not a human. Like, we forget that, right? He has made such a supernatural presence and character. But that is a guy. His bones aren't any different than yours. And his mental preparation and knowing full well the boxes he has to check and knowing full well, if I don't check them, it's not going to go well, but I will walk out there and try anyway, because if I land that left hand, I'm never going to have to get to those championship rounds. Now, that isn't much to bank on. And that takes a very special amount of courage and character to go through with it. Now, he got confronted with this test on June 29th, and it was too much. It was too much. I can deal with all of those things, but I got a discolored toe. It's too much. But I think he will pass the test next time. And as I'm watching him, and I'm watching his movements, and as beautiful as they are, they're also as slow as molasses going uphill. So I don't know what part of the process this was. If he was the cameraman, just by example, let's say D wasn't there, he's on vacation, he's got to be the cameraman. So that involves him setting up the camera. Well, now you can't have gloves on. That would make a level of sense. I would have no problem with that. I can't get a whole lot from a heavy bag on a back deck on vacation. I understand that. But rule number one is you protect your tools. Literally, rule number one, you don't do anything. You don't step onto the mat. You don't go out there and bow if you're at a traditional gym. You don't do anything until you wrap your hands. And he was hitting a bag with hands unwrapped. So I'm just sharing. There are questions to that. Clayton Hires would have never let me on the mat, but I could have done it if I was at a private house and it was in my own heavy bag and Clayton wasn't there. But those don't speak to the things needed to be prepared to deal with Michael Chandler. So how much do you want to get out of a little clip? Well, that's what I'm going to get out of it. And you may tell me, and he may tell me, that's very unfair. Well, I'm like an accountant. I'm as good as the information that I'm being given. I didn't question the discolored pinky toe, which may or may not be broken and may or may not belong to you. I didn't question that because this is the information I was given. But now I'm given that there's a vacation home with a heavy bag in the back, a couple of dumbbells on the side, nobody there to film, which means you're alone, and nobody gets any better by themselves. Oh, and by the way, we remember the tight shorts, and we remember to fight from a southpaw stance in extremely slow motion, but we forgot to bring our gloves. Floyd Mayweather, John Gotti Jr., the third? Is he the third? I've always been a little bit unclear on that. Like the poster said, Floyd Mayweather versus John Gotti Jr. 3. So now I'm going, okay, is he John Gotti the third? Or is this the third time that they're fighting? And I know they'd fought once before. Like it'd be Floyd Mayweather versus John Gotti Jr. the third, the second. And I'm in either way. Whatever's going to happen here, I'm into it. I like his dad. I like the old man. I'm going to watch. And it takes a massive amount of courage to get in the ring and do that, particularly against a Mayweather, right? I think we, at a minimum, we can all agree on that. So I'm on board. I'm going to watch this. And the fight ends up taking place. Floyd gets rid of the ref in the third round. Please don't correct me on my facts. I don't care if he did in the first round or the second round. I believe it was in the third round. It's not my point, so don't correct me on that. He gets rid of the referee and a new referee comes in. Now, this is the headline. And I watch the clip. And sure enough, Floyd is complaining to a referee and he leaves and a new referee comes in. But there is nowhere within that clip that Floyd fired the referee. That was a very baffling story to me to come out. Now, I'm from MMA. I'm well aware we cannot tell a story correctly over here. Boxing, which is the dirtiest sport in the world, which is done in the dirtiest jurisdiction, was in Mexico where these two guys fought. Why would I expect that our journalists could get it right? But did they? If they did, how do they know? It wasn't Floyd's event. So they said that Floyd fired the referee. Okay, well, if it's not Floyd's event and he's not the boss, he can't fire him. Do you know what fire means? Do you know? I mean, do you know? Do you know what a boss means? Because a lot of people don't. I'm not trying to be a condescending prick. I will see people act like they're the boss. Do you sign the front of the check or the back of the check? Like, this is real easy. Litmus test. I see people come out and they want to be the boss, but they don't have a bank account. Right there, you're excluded. The boss signs the front of the check. And I only bring that to you because Floyd did not. Like, the money team isn't real. That's just something that our media and our fans went with because they don't know the business side of boxing. Very few people do. But the money team's not real. This wasn't Floyd's event. There was no part of Floyd that thought he could turn a profit. There was no part of Floyd, who knows this business very well, that thought his profits would exceed his expenditures going to Mexico City to fight an Italian named Gotti. So, how would he fire him? Where would you even get that line? And then moreover, could he try to fire him? Could he flex and be a fake boss? We see that all the time too. For sure, he's got pull, he's got sway, it's boxing after all. Did he say you're fired? Did he say get out of here? Did he say bring a new guy in? Did he say anything that could be misconstrued for somebody that doesn't know what they're doing to put out an article and say Floyd fired the ref? And I'm asking a question. I'm willing to be wrong. I'm even protecting the guy's name that put this out, but I noticed how many people picked it up. And it's an amazing thing to me when something's on video and people still try to deny it. Like, that is really an amazing thing, right? I get history buffs. They'll try to tell me about history and say, well, okay, I'll drink to that. I know that's what you were taught and told, but you don't actually know. Like, don't get bullish on your idea about how the Romans and the empire took place. You don't actually know. That was hundreds of years ago. There's no photos. There's no living witnesses. Floyd Mayweather either fired a ref or he didn't 3 nights ago on television that everybody saw, or he didn't, and it's being debated. They'll tell you that dinosaurs roamed the earth 20 million years ago. They won't tell you who shot JFK in the late 60s, and it's on tape. And this is just a fascinating concept for me. So when I'm watching this and I can't hear what Floyd is saying, which is why I'm open to being wrong. If Floyd said certain words, I'd be open to being wrong. But if I'm just watching it, my first take would not be that Floyd, who is complaining, replaced a referee. It would either be that the referee quit or the commission pulled him. That would be a far more reasonable conclusion, considering the commission is the one that oversees the officials. And by the way, this was the main event. So in what world do you have a referee on standby that happens to be at ringside? I mean, it's just like a realistic and fundamental position. Now, that referee could have switched roles, and all of a sudden, he's the timekeeper. I get it. Again, I'm open to you having a response to this. But to say that Floyd fired the referee when it's on tape and he did no such thing, not to mention he was not the referee's boss, I feel like you owe an answer. And again, if you have, you know exactly who I'm talking to. You can come on. You can give it. You can make me a video. I'll air it. Unedited. But if you don't, I'm going to come back and I am going to say who did it. And I'm going to strip your credibility, which you would deserve. And it was an amazingly stupid thing to say on a fight that is taking gaming action. Because you just made it professional wrestling. And you don't actually know that it was professional wrestling. You don't actually know and have evidence that Floyd fired him. And if he did, you don't know if that was because it was wrestling and that was an entertainment aspect. You don't know if that referee felt like he got sick and was going to fight, and they had to tag somebody else in. Oh, and by the way, that's in subsection 3 on page 9 of the administrative rules. Like, you don't actually know. You just saw Floyd complain, and then you saw a referee get swapped out. So, where am I wrong? What did you hear that I didn't hear? What correction do I need to make? But this was bet on. It was handicapped. If there's not a subsection that says the commission has the right to pull a ref and insert another, this is a massive and colossal mistaken problem. And the media is claiming just that. So what evidence do you have? I have evidence that Floyd complained. I have evidence that Floyd was not happy with the decision made by the referee in that moment. But what evidence do you have that Floyd had the power to fire a referee, which means another referee in proper uniform is ringside in the main event? I mean, do you understand how rare that would be? Because he's no longer needed. There's nothing left for any other referee to do. It's not like they're in the back waiting to change in and out. It's the main event. There are no other fights. It seems like a leap. I'm open to being wrong. What is it that you know that I missed? All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a reminder that if you'd like to support the show, there's a number of things that you can do. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Submit a rating on Spotify, subscribe to my YouTube channel, or give me a follow on Twitter, which the kids now call X. I promise you won't regret it. I'm going to be back for more on Friday, everybody. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.